The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, it is. And it's a Friday. We made it through another week, which is always, you know, questionable. Never know. Although things are getting really real in Washington, D.C. Did you read or hear that Cori Bush, new congresswoman from the St. Louis area, actually from the Ferguson area, was berated in the hallway of Congress today by none other than Marjorie Taylor Greene and some of her her cohorts, maskless. And Cori Bush is now moving her office because she doesn't feel safe. And she doesn't feel as her as if her staffers are safe from Marjorie Taylor Greene. This woman is reprehensible. And I got to tell you, she, you know, was named by Leader McCarthy to sit on the Education Committee. Yet this is a woman who has proclaimed that the school shootings from Sandy Hook to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas were hoaxes. False flags, didn't really happen. And now I got to tell you, the anniversary, the third anniversary of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is coming up in 2 weeks. It happened on Valentine's Day of 2018. So the third anniversary. That school is right down the street from where I live. This is our community. I live in Coral Springs. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas is in Parkland. We are two communities that are, you know, together. We share a police department, I believe, and a fire department as well. And it's disconcerting. And actually, the subject came up in a discussion that you'll hear in a moment. But right after I finished taping that, my phone rang, and it was David, my husband, who was sitting in his car in line at Marlins Stadium way the hell down in Miami to get his COVID shot. Because Florida is so screwed up. So he had to go down to Miami, but he got his shot. But he called to tell me that he just saw an alert on his phone that once again, there were there was a lot of police activity around Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, that there were police cars everywhere, that the school was on lockdown. The middle school next door was on lockdown. I'm like, oh, holy shit. Let me see what I can find out. Well, apparently somebody called in. You know, a scare, a false, a hoax scare to the middle school that's right next door to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. They locked down the middle school, put it on red alert, and they put Marjorie Stoneman Douglas on yellow alert. They searched the school, determined that there was no threat there, and everything went back to code green. But I got to tell you, my stomach dropped because obviously, you know, somebody, one of these crazies is going to do something crazy, and it's just, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop. So thankfully, knocking on wood laminate here, thankfully, all is clear here in Parkland. I don't know how long it'll stay that way, because after all, this is America in the era of Donald Trump. The whole thing is just so fucked up. And although things, I think, are getting better, I mean, they got to be, he's at least out of office. You know, McCarthy, the minority leader in the House who wants to be speaker, who just the other day proclaimed, you know, Donald Trump has to take some responsibility for this. He was complicit. He helped, you know, he helped incite this riot. And we all know that to be true. After he said that the other day, well, where did he go this week? Actually, when he should have been at work, because sorry, it's still the week. It's not the weekend. And I guess he did it on a taxpayer dime. He went down to Mar-a-Lago. You know, before we get to that, this is what Kevin McCarthy said.
The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding. These facts require immediate action, by President Trump. Accept his share of responsibility, quell the brewing unrest, and ensure President-elect Biden is able to successfully begin his term.
Yeah.
His share is able to his term.
Okay. Thank you. I don't know why it skipped like that, but you get the idea. That was Kevin McCarthy. Wow, what a difference a week makes. Because yesterday, he flew down to Florida to kiss the ring and, I don't know, suck the mushroom dick of Donald Trump. Because the Republican Party realizes they can't do anything without his contingent of crazy. So, you know what? When I see something good, something that warms my heart a little bit, I want to celebrate it. And something like that happened this week. And so the rest of the show today, frankly, is pre-recorded. It was just recorded a couple of hours ago because the person that is my guest also is on the radio and her show is on at the same time. Now, thanks to the magic of podcasting and the way things are done now, we don't compete because you can listen to my show and listen to Robin Kincaid's show as well. And you're saying, Robin Kincaid? I don't know a broadcaster named Robin Kincaid. Well, probably you do, because chances are, if you listen to this show, that you may know of Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid, who's been a broadcaster for his whole life, has been doing a show on the Head On Radio Network, which these days is at headon.live. So, and you can get her podcast too. So don't feel like you got to run over there now. But, well, you know what? When we started talking, I told the story. So without any further ado, I'm just going to go to the videotape, as they say. All right, here we go. Oops. Why is it doing that? Oh, I know why it's doing that, because I'm playing it this way. Ah! I don't need to do that. Hold on. Here we go. This is how it works. Joining us on the line is an old friendly acquaintance, a fellow broadcaster who, let me just tell you what happened. So last week, I find myself embroiled in a Twitter discussion with somebody who has swallowed hook, line, and sinker the right-wing talking points on executive orders and is echoing them back. And I'm trying to politely school this person as to saying, no, what Joe Biden is doing is perfectly acceptable. And joining me in this takedown of this Twitter person is somebody named Robin Kincaid. And I'm thinking, Robin Kincaid, I wonder if there's any relation. And then I look and I see that the actual Twitter handle is at Bob Kincaid. Well, I know Bob Kincaid. What Robin? And then I see the picture and it sure is Robin. And then I learned, well, Robin Kincaid, you've made some life changes recently.
I did. Starting last September, I started hormone replacement therapy because I've been trans all my life. And on New Year's Eve on my program, I came out to my radio audience, and a couple of days later, came out on a really wonderful show for trans people and trans allies. And it's called Trans Talk Raw. And it's just the most wonderful, affirming, after 58 years of not being, to finally get to be. It's almost difficult to put into words. So, you know, now, Nicole, I'm a former fellow broadcaster. I'm a non-fellow broadcaster. Yes. Still a broadcaster, just not a fella.
Gotcha. So you said you've been trans all your life. So you've felt you were in the wrong body since you were very young?
Oh, without a doubt. I've told people, like, I remember, you know, right about the time that consciousness develops, you know, you're still very much a child, but you can tell, you know, it's kind of like when there's smoke pouring out of the kitchen, you know, something's on fire. And so in my particular case, you know, there was this one incident, not an incident, but it's just a moment. Uh-huh. My father brought home a football uniform for a little kid, you know, it's a costume. It's not a real uniform.
Right.
But, you know, had to put on all the gear and stand there with the football tucked under my arm. And I hated it. And meanwhile, down the street, the little neighbor girls, my same age, were, you know, off to ballet. And I'm like, not this, that. And of course, we're talking about the late 60s in Alabama. So not like you go, I want to be a girl, because that's a great way in a place like Alabama in the late 60s, or just about anywhere else in the United States or the world in the late 60s, to get dead.
Yeah. I said hurt.
And
you said
so
dead.
You tuck it away and you cope. And then, you know, you get a little older, adolescence sets in, changes start happening, and you're going, no, no, please, Jesus, no. But it does. And there's nothing to be done about it. And all the way through high school, all the way through college, law school, work at CNN, you know, family, all of that. And yeah, the whole time, the whole time.
Now,
because it's inescapable.
Wow. So now you mentioned family, and you do have a family. You're married. You have children, right? Are you still?
Yeah, four kids, married 28 years this May.
Wow. And everything is still good there? You have a very understanding wife?
The kids are accepting, and I'm so happy for that. In fact, when I came out to one of them, they said, well, that took long enough.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And let's see, there was an It's About Time. There was one of those, too. And my spouse and I are together, and I think in many ways we love each other more than we ever have. Merely in a different way.
Wow.
So the relationship has transformed, but I would crawl across ground glass for her, and she makes my life absolutely wonderful each and every day and will not let me go out looking like a flim dip on payday. And so there's nothing to complain about there. The only complaint I have right now is that here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it's about 59 degrees. It got down into 16 last night, so it's a little brisk in here. But then, you know, got a sweater going for me.
In Florida, it got chilly last night too, and we've had the weather is just weird everywhere. But there's changes going on all around us. So Robin Kincaid, Robin is actually your given name, isn't it?
It is. It is.
That's
and,
great.
And one of the funnier stories out of all of this is that, you know, our culture makes assumptions about gender just based upon a name.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was 15 years old, I went to the mail. You know, when you're 15, you know, you don't get mail very often. But, you know, I went to the mailbox and there was something addressed to me. And yay, because, you know, when you're 15, they're not bills. So I eagerly ripped open my envelope to find that I had been invited to participate in Alabama's Junior Miss.
Oh. Because Robin,
like, you know,
right?
This is a sign. later on, when I passed the bar, my first certificate from the West Virginia court system said, you know, having demonstrated her ability.
Wow.
And of course, they, you know, had to act all, you know, oh, I'm outraged. Don't they know? And roll it up, send it back, and get it back with my old pronouns now. I'd give anything to have that thing now.
I'll bet.
But after a while, you begin to look around and go, does everybody know? I mean, but me? You know, the one thing I think all trans people can say is, you know, we can quote Forrest Gump and say, at least I ain't led no humdrum life.
Well, that's true. So here we are. It's 2021. So you've known your whole life that you were trans. But it wasn't until this year actually the end of last year. You said in September you started taking hormones and transitioning. How long did it take you to make the decision to finally do it?
Well, I had tried to transition back at the beginning of the century.
Oh, wow.
And there was just too much chaos, and it wasn't possible, and I detransitioned, and it about killed me.
Mm.
It was horrible. And so when the pandemic started up, and I just began having conversations with my spouse, and I said, if I'm ever going to do it, I'm going to do it now, because in the middle of this godforsaken pandemic that can take anybody at any time, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go as the real me. And now, and so, you know, started the hormone therapy. You know, looked at, it's not very easy to get hormone therapy in a place like West Virginia, especially during a pandemic.
Right. But,
bless Planned Parenthood's heart. I'm a patient at Planned Parenthood now, and a very happy one. And they do telemedicine, so I did the intake and everything, and they made sure I really was, and gave me my prescriptions, and I started on them. And you know, the wild thing is, on the one hand, it was like, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go as the real me. But now that this has started, it's like, I want to see this out. I want to ride this as far as it can go, because it's wonderful. For somebody who is trans, living with the wrong hormones and the wrong chemicals is just awful. I have never been happier in my life than I am now that the testosterone is no longer tormenting me.
Oh, wow. That's great. Well, congratulations, if I didn't already say it.
Thank you.
Because this is huge to be able to. And look, we're not kids anymore. So to be able to make a change like this later on, I'm older than you are. I'm 61. So to know, yourself well enough and say that I'm ready to do this is great. Now, the other part of it is you live a life in the public spotlight. You're a broadcaster. You officially came out, you said you did it on a trans show, but on your show, on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
How was that?
I was as nervous as a wax cat outside the air conditioned gates of hell. it was terrifying, but I had a dear friend, and this is just a wonderful story, and I want to give her all the credit in the world. Way, way, way back a million years ago when the world was young and we rode our dinosaurs to high school, I had a very good friend. We were both terrible, terrible third string scrubs on the football team. And we were on stage together in plays in high school. I mean, every day, you know, we're buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was scrolling through my high school graduating class Facebook page, and I saw this photograph, and it said, "Do you know who I am?" It's this lovely woman. And I went, "No, not really." And started reading and went, "Well, I'll be dipped," because it was my buddy from the football team.
Wow.
I mean, you know, not just acquaintances, we were friends. And so she reached out to me and said, "Hey, how you doing?" I said, "Oh, started transitioning back in September," and she was like, "Shut up!" And so she's become a great mentor to me, and she's one of the hosts of this program that airs every Saturday morning on Facebook, Trans Talk Raw, and so she's also a professional geologist. And the previous day, we'd had a story about some idiot right-wing Christian saying that if you believed in, if you acknowledged evolution, you had to believe that monkeys surfed from Africa to South America. And I had a big time with that. I love those stories. So we were talking, and I said, "Well, what we'll do is you'll come on, we'll talk about surf monkeys and evolution and the geology of Africa and South America. And then we'll talk about your show." And that's exactly what we did. And she said, "Yes, we have." And she co-hosts along with another individual who's a lovely person, Nikki. And so she talked about her show and everything. And I said, "Yes." And it turns out I'm going to be y'all's first guest of the new year because I'm trans.
Wow.
And in terms of radio, we work without a live audience. There's no footlights. There's nobody to, peer over the lights and see
right
out there. But you could pretty much hear a pin drop.
I'll bet.
What? Yeah. And I had to answer several questions. It's like, "Is this another one of your bits, Bob? is this more of your shtick? Because this, And I said, no, this is not a joke. This is all very, very, very real."
Wow. And what kind? And so that's been just about a month now. And how has the response been since?
It has been wonderful. I'm most fortunate. You know, there's a lot of meanness and nastiness out there toward the trans community.
Oh, yeah.
We're probably the most hated individual group in the entire country. But I'm fortunate in that where I live in West Virginia is a magnificent little blue dot in the middle of a blood red ocean. And I came out there, I came out in my community and started living out, you know, full time. And it was nothing but acceptance, nothing but love, nothing but, you know, happiness for me. And then when I came out on the radio show, everybody has just been so kind, and we've had a real good time because I still haven't finished cleaning up all of the imaging for the show and stuff. So it still says that on with Bob Kincaid.
Right, right.
And people are like, Bob, Robin, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I know. I misgender myself 3 or 4 or 5 times a day too.
Right.
And we're all going to get used to this together. So it's been absolutely delightful, Nicole.
Oh, that's, I love hearing that. That's great. And I figured our community of listeners, and we do share right. a good number of listeners.
A lot of overlap.
Oh, yeah. And when I mentioned you were coming on today in my chat room, a number of people's like, oh, that's so great. We're so excited for her. Well, I actually made an introduction for you via email, and
yes.
I don't know if you guys had the chance to talk yet or not. But
I have a feeling we will be.
Yes, you will be. Because down here in South Florida, going back a ways, when I was a kid, my father, for instance, was a big fan of the Neil Rogers show. Neil Rogers was a legend in South Florida radio. He was also one of the first gay men to come out as gay on the airwaves. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And this was, I'll let Britt tell us, because Boca Brittany Summers now, well, she does radio. She bills herself. She says she's the only licensed transgender broadcaster on the smoldering remains of terrestrial radio. She does a weekly show. But Britt Summers back in the day, I call her Boca Britt. She was Boca Brian and did all the great production work and everything for Neil Rogers. I think Britt is with us. Britt, you need to turn on your camera and I can bring you into the shot. Okay. No. Okay. There you are. Okay.
Hi.
Britt Summers.
Hi.
Meet Robin Kincaid.
I'm so glad to meet you. I've heard your shows. Very good. I've heard your
thank you.
My boy. And let me welcome you to the life.
Thank you so much.
So,
I couldn't be happier to be here.
Now, so Britt, how did you always know you were trans as well?
I suppressed it.
You suppressed
much,
it.
Much like Robin was saying, you suppress that sort of thing. And after a while, you suppress it, you forget about it. And then one day, 21 years ago, a grand piano fell on my head as I was walking down the street, and that was it.
Not an anvil?
I just made the swish. Not an anvil, no. But I like to refer to it as I was vacuuming in capri pants and listening to Herb Alpert records, and that did it. I thought maybe
that would
happen to anybody,
I suppose. But Britt, when you worked with Neil Rogers, he was a gay man, an openly gay man on the airwaves in South Florida, which was unheard of at the time. But you couldn't come out to him.
No, he was the first, like I said, like you said, historically, in 1977, when Anita Bryant was in Florida campaigning against the gay community, he came out as gay in 1977, and it's pretty remarkable. And that made him a marquee ever since that point. But he was a force. He was like a giant in this area, in the 3-county area, 4 million people. And he was my boss. And he was gay. And for some reason, to this day, and I've asked gay men this question, they don't have an answer either. Some gay men just don't like transgenders. And he didn't. And I just, for the sake of the show and the radio station, we just kept it quiet. And then when he passed away, I came out at his funeral.
I never knew that.
Oh, wow.
Wow. At his funeral. That's pretty amazing. And the other people, George Rodriguez, who was the producer of the program and a dear friend of both you and I, who passed away last year, shockingly, he was cool with it from day one, yeah?
Oh, yeah. He thought it was hilarious. I mean, he would, you know, do the overdramatic door openings for me and all this. And yeah, he put the like a little rag down so I could walk over. He was a smart ass. We had fun with it.
And so here you are, and today you say you're the only licensed transgender broadcaster on the smoldering remains of terrestrial radio. You can find Britt at thebrittsummershow.com. So Robin Kincaid, I guess that still holds because you're not on terrestrial radio.
No. I'm still internet only, and probably will be that way forevermore because of the aforementioned smoldering wreckage of terrestrial radio. I mean, there's no room for the likes of us.
No, you for know, any
even
of us.
Even before I came out.
Right.
Oh no, you can't be on the. And I was on terrestrial radio in West Virginia for about a year and a half before the coal industry decided that I had to go.
Now, Robin, you mentioned, you said in your community you were well accepted. You're in West Virginia. I mean, being a trans woman in West Virginia, what is that like?
So far, it has been surprisingly positive, but I haven't done anything that really puts me out in a public spotlight. You know, the minute I start standing up and raising hell about something in this state, I'm sure it's going to get real ugly real fast. And you know what? I'm okay with that, because as mean as anybody would like to think they can be to me, I've studied at the foot of the master, because I have been mean to me, meaner to me than anybody else can be for 50 years. I got alligator hide. And so, you know, there's an old saying up here in the hills, root hog or die, tough hide lasts the longest. It's pretty tough. I think I'm a pretty tough old bird.
Yeah. Britt, I bet you can relate to that one, huh?
Yeah, this life has a tendency to weed out the wheat from the chaff as far as friends go. And if you have friends or family that really care for you and love you, they're going to stay with you no matter what. But the ones who jump ship, I have an old saying for that. It rhymes with fuck 'em.
Yeah,
and I don't care.
Joke them if they can't take a.
Yeah. That's right. I have a question for you, Robin.
Yes.
When does Mike Malloy know? I mean, what was his reaction?
Oh, yeah, I called Mike right away when I was getting ready to come out on air. I called him first and said I'd rather you hear it from me than anybody else. And Mike was just wonderful. As you would expect Mike to be.
Yeah.
And we had a hilarious conversation and a serious one too. And he was, you know, well, I'm right there with you the whole way. And I explained to him, it's not a lot of the same things that I've explained to Nicole this afternoon. And he said, well, I never suspected. And I said, well, that's because I'm a damn fine actor.
Right.
He said, you must be. And incidentally, the last thing, right before all the shutdown came for the pandemic and everything, I had gone back to my hometown in Alabama last year. And I've been in theater all my life. And we put up an amateur production of a play called The Lion in Winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize it at the time, but I knew it was, you know, all this was running through my head as I got nearer and nearer. And I played Henry II. I don't know if you've ever seen the film. Peter O'Toole plays it, and a lot of growling and barking around on the stage and very, very hyper-masculine and everything. And for me, I think it was my subconscious farewell to that me. And then, you know, came back home and started. And so, you know, but we all do. I know you had to, Britt. You probably covered it with some sort of hypermasculinity. There's lots of pictures of me out there with Hemingway-esque beards.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, Hemingway, for God's sakes. You know, there's a picture of Hemingway when he was 3 years old standing next to his sister. And they're both in dresses, and Hemingway's mother labeled it Summer Girls.
Wow.
And so Hemingway spends his entire life, you know, trying to prove his masculinity. And all of his wives looked like little boys.
Wow. How interesting.
T.S. Eliot in the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock says, I shall prepare a face to meet the faces that I meet. And we all do that. I think if you're trans, and it matters not if you're trans masculine or trans feminine, you find ways to try to make sure that you keep your own tamped way the hell down so that no one will ever suspect.
Yeah.
Because it's such a dark and terrifying thing.
Then you start believing your own veneer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What happened to me?
Yeah, I was, well, my spouse will freely tell anyone who cares to listen that I was an asshole.
Hmm.
And that kind of comes with the territory of trying to keep it, because anything that could be perceived as feminine, non-masculine, and could be, you know, the key to figuring out what a horrible human being you are.
Wow.
Because, you know, the horrible human being part goes with it, too.
Well, I learned that lesson sitting across the table from my dates.
From which date?
Well, there we go.
You know, it hit me like, I was one of those. Mm-hmm. Men can be assholes.
Yeah. So Britt, does it surprise you? Robin's married and his wife or his spouse knows, I mean, did she know when you got married? Has she known all along, or what was that conversation?
No,
like?
she didn't know everything, Nicole. And in fact, she will tell you that it just came as more of a surprise each and it, but, by 20 years ago, at least, you know, when I started my first attempt at transition, she knew.
Oh.
There's more to share with, to share about, and there's more to shop for.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, I told Nicole before you came on, she is absolutely my best friend and won't, you know, and she came in while I was getting ready for this, and, you know, she's like, oh no. And she reached over and blended my eyeshadow a little bit and says, see what I did there? And so she's mentoring me and she is protective toward me. And I could not ask for anything more in the world.
Was it, I knew this is a kind of a stupid question, but I'll phrase it differently than I was thinking. It must have been a huge sigh of relief for a different reason than I breathed a sigh of relief when Donald Trump left the White House. Obviously, one of the first things Joe Biden did was reverse the trans ban in the military, which was crazy. I mean, Britt and I have spoken about that because Britt served in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just the attitudes from the government down, it's got to be a sigh of relief.
From the administration, Nicole, it's wonderful. I mean, it was exciting just to see Joe Biden say, and the trans people.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, I felt, you know, and I'm just new to this. Britt probably far more so. But you feel like one of the Who's that's finally been heard by Horton. You know, we're here. But by the same token, it's also state legislature season now. So various and sundry Confederate and maggot state legislatures, there's at least 10 states out there right now that have some of the most nasty, vile, hateful, odious legislative garbage that's aimed strictly at our community. And there's never any break. There's never any let up. You've constantly got to be on the watch against this stuff and trying to advocate against it and trying to build activist support to push back against it. And the fad right now, and I think it's a carryover from something that happened in England not too long back, is to file bills in godforsaken Republican state legislatures that ban trans kids from receiving puberty blockers.
Oh, God.
You know, not gender confirmation surgery or anything like that, just puberty blockers, just hold off the chemical process until a child can make a proper decision without having their bodies wrecked by the wrong hormones. And so these things are popping up all over the United States like poisonous mushrooms after a spring rain. In New Hampshire right now, and in several other states, there's legislation that would treat a parent, get this, just dig this, a parent or parents who have a trans child who are accepting of that trans child and love their trans child regardless of whether the child, in New Hampshire, a Republican sponsored bill says that that's child abuse. And that the child could and should be taken out of a loving home and taken away from the parents who love him or her or they.
Wow. Wow. Well, we live, you know, we live in Florida, and Britt is very involved in local politics, and Florida is not the most, you know, friendly to alternative lifestyles, if we put it that way.
And that's so strange because one would think that the demographics where you are such that there would be a lot more of us.
There are here where we live. Yeah. In certain counties. Well, we're fine.
In South Florida, we're in Broward, so it's...
Yeah. And
but maybe up in Lee County, not so much?
What's that?
Maybe up in Lee County, not so much?
No. I had to address a women's club up in Sebring, which is near Lake Okeechobee, which is the heart of redneck country there. And I got to tell you, you know... Being a trans woman for 20 years and getting used to driving and everything, that was the first time I got scared.
Wow.
I got nervous there. Talk about deep state Trump land. And I'm thinking, like, there's no way I could ever live where my sister lives up in Claremont, up in north of Orlando. I could I'd be in trouble. I mean, I go to Publix there. I feel I get the spilkies just walking down the aisle. I mean, because there's no masks. So...
Oh, boy. Oh, there are masks on top of it. Right.
Well, you know, various states make it really more or less difficult to, for instance, change your gender markers on your official documents, your passports, your driver's license, your social security number, whatever.
Are you going to do the legal
And that can be very, very dangerous very, very quickly. If you get pulled over and you are dressed as your authentic self and you have to hand over a driver's license that shows, in my case, me as a guy with an M for male there. Mm-hmm. Again, it's another opportunity to get dead real quick.
Well, there's a quick way around that that I don't know about West Virginia. You know, God bless you. I wouldn't want to do that. But down here for a while, I don't know if you could do it anymore. I have my picture on my license, but my boy info is still on there. So if I do get pulled over, at least it'll match the ID, and it works really well with TSA. I've had no problem with that.
Hmm. Wow. I mean, they really couldn't, they really can't complain about how you present for your photo, can they?
No. I mean, that's you. In fact, I'll tell you a real quick story. I was at the White Plains Airport in Westchester, and I'm going through TSA, and I was stopped by one of the TSA agents, and she's looking at my picture and looking at me. She says, "You and I have a lot in common, honey."
Well, now,
so there you go.
Nice. Yeah, very cool. So, yeah, I guess you find strange bedfellows everywhere, right? You never know. And so, you know, here we are in broadcasting, and I guess it's more common than cis people like me know, because everybody has their own lives, and you know what your body is, you know how you feel, right? But to have two, you know, friends who are both radio people, who I figured you two needed to know each other, because although you're quite different, obviously Britt's a New Yorker who's been, you know, around for a long time.
Oh, I love it. I heard that a minute ago. And I meanwhile, I'm a hillbilly.
And you're a hillbilly. And
a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll.
It's a match made in purgatory.
So, Britt, do you have any advice for Robin going forward? I mean, she was talking before we started taping. She was telling me about how she realized she's allergic to the mascara. And you know what? I love the effects of mascara, but I hate the feeling of it, so I hardly ever wear it. It's just, it comes with the territory. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, I do. But if she's allergic to mascara, what about eyeliner? Are you allergic to liquid eyeliner?
The liquid eyeliner and I do not get along.
So you products.
I told Nicole before we got started that every time I try to use liquid eyeliner, I wind up writing Chinese curses across my eyelids. So I've got the mechanical pencil stuff. I've learned to manage that.
And there's hypoallergenic. You look for the hypoallergenic.
Yeah, and I try to. I mean, this is good stuff, but for some reason or another, because the foundation doesn't do it to me, the primer doesn't do it to me, none of the other stuff, and I'm good with the eyeshadow and all of that, but the minute the mascara goes on, and I'm blotting, you know, because my nose starts running.
How about false? Maybe you tried with that? Tried false?
Haven't gotten brave enough for that yet.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff. I mean, you've been out for so long. Where I am now, there is so much to be learned, and there are so many little traps to fall into and pitfalls. And I've got a running gag that I've got an inner 12-year-old that I keep locked in a Barbie dream house in the basement, lest she winds up putting me in a pink tutu and sending me doing grand jetés down the freaking main street. Yeah, you got to guard against that because you got to act your age, and that's not always easy when you're trying to get over an entire repressed life.
Yeah, a whole lifetime.
Yeah. If you need any more, if you'd like to talk, if you'd like to get together, Nicole has all my contact information. Feel free to contact me.
Well, we're pals on Facebook.
Well, like I said, you could contact me on Facebook.
I'll pass along your phone number, and so you girls can talk.
Absolutely.
I use the term "you guys" even when I'm talking to women, and now that I say "you guys," I'm thinking.
No, we've already had a conversation about gender neutral guys, gender neutral dude. I don't sweat anything along those lines. Call me anything you want. Just don't call me late for brunch.
My sister will say Brian once in a while, and just, I'm sorry. I'm like, please, I don't care.
It's like, yeah, exactly.
Relax.
Oh,
I feel like I was lucky because Robin is my birth name.
That is,
and that's part of the whole weirdness of growing up. So. At least that's not going to be as expensive when it's time to file all the legal papers and do all that stuff. I just, there it is. I mean, I thought about other names, but no, I'll stay with the name that I tried to run away from for the last 58 years.
It's amazing. I'm so happy for you. I think it's a wonderful thing that you're able to do this. And after all these years that you're finally able to be the real you. And I'm thrilled that I can introduce you to Britt, who is an amazing person. And, I adore both of you. And I'm glad that you can, I'm sure you're going to have moments when you want to talk to somebody who's been there, and at least here's one resource for you.
Oh yeah, and I'm lucky that a number of girls have reached out to me and said, as Britt did, welcome to the club. Britt, I would like to ask one quick question because we do share the commonality of broadcast. I started in radio when I was 16 years old, when all my friends had all the good jobs at McDonald's and Burger King and stuff.
Yes.
And I got a job at a little gospel radio station. And I got that job because I could read well, and I had the theater and speech background and everything. And I had a 16-year-old baritone bass voice that just wouldn't quit. And, I've pretty much been in and out of radio all my life. And, my broadcast voice has been what got me going, what took me where I am. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, do you deal with much dysphoria out of your own voice?
No. No, it's the moneymaker for me, number one. Number two, Anne Bancroft and Suzanne Plachet had deeper voices than both of us.
So true.
You can't really go by the register of your voice. And besides, if I started lightening my voice like that, I don't think Nicole would want any of my opens or breaks.
And Britt does all my opens in production and stuff. So, yeah, it's perfect for me.
Keep your voice. Your voice is fine. That makes you my transistor sister, as Pretty Cannon once said.
Excellent. Yes.
There you go. All right. Well, I look forward to hearing the Robin Kincaid show on the Head On Radio Network. HeadOn.live is where people can find your show. And we're actually taping this earlier because you're on the air at the same time I am.
We are. Yeah. I moved from 5 to 8 back when I went down to Alabama to do the play because I was in the Central Time Zone. I had been 6 to 9, but I moved back to, and so instead of jumping around, I just left it at 5 to 8, and You know, we seem to be doing pretty well, both of us, as is. So, and you know, that's the glory of podcasting. Mm-hmm. You can check out the live show.
That's right.
And then you can say, "Oh, I'll take the podcast later," and you bounce back and forth. So, and
that's it.
It's an entirely different broadcast world.
It really is. Everything has changed. And you're still doing 3 hours a day. I'm just doing one. But, you know, we do what we can, when we can, how we can.
I'm a Southerner, and it takes me 30 minutes to say my name. So I have to have that extra 2.5 hours just to cover 2.5 stories.
I hear you. All right, Britt. And you know, one other thing. One of the reasons I wanted to get you together is I mentioned Britt is very active in Florida politics, and
right.
she, and but not only Florida, in all politics. And she put together a letter. I think I copied you on it, Robin. That
I read it.
Okay, about the dearth of progressive voices on the airwaves. So, Britt, this was aimed at the FCC. Who are you looking to confront with this letter?
Well, Jessica Rosenworcel,
okay,
who is pro net neutrality, she was at odds with Ajit Pai.
Yeah, so is she the new FCC chairman? Chairwoman?
Acting.
Acting.
I don't think she's been confirmed yet.
Gotcha.
But she seems like a reasonable woman. She seems like she'd be willing to listen to us, the broadcasters out there. My ultimate objective with this is to have other broadcasters write their own letters, or they can use mine and contact their representatives. Now, I had a chance to talk to Ted Deutch before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I was going to set up an audience with him. I met with his aide. And then the pandemic hit. This was back in January.
Ted Deutch is our congressman down here.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I never had the opportunity. And I'd love to talk to him, although he probably won't understand a word I say. You'll notice that the contacts I put that I mailed to, that they probably didn't even see it. They probably deleted it. AOC. All the progressive, what do they call them?
The squad.
That's I sent it to the squad, and I sent it. Here's the funny part. I just, for the hell of it, I sent it to Andrew Yang, and that was the only reply I got.
Really?
Oh, damn.
And the reply was from his New York campaign. I have a problem with that since he lives in California, but he's running for mayor in New York City.
Yes.
His response was, "Hi there. Would you like to contribute 250 or more?" I'm like, wait, you're asking me to give you money? Really?
You got a lot of knives.
So my contacts are just what I could find online. I don't really know how to get through to these people, but if anybody else does, I'm glad to forward the letter to whoever else in the business that would be willing to help. I know Tom Hartman has been addressing this to, like, Mark Picone? Or Pocan.
Pocan, yes.
Who was supposed to be head of the Progressive.
Not anymore. Now Pramila Jayapal heads up the Progressive.
Is she? Oh, that's
yes.
Great. That's
she's,
great news.
She's the head of the Progressive Caucus.
I sent it to her, too. So maybe we'll have some luck with this, because if you read the letter, this is, we're going to have another uprising. We're going to continue to have this right wing hatred. This vitriol is going to, well, that's their job, to stoke it up. That's why they're on the air.
Well, it's like the late great Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, once said, "It's a big dollar." You know, there's good money in fomenting insurrection.
Yeah.
No. There's also good money in entertaining people, which is what Nicole and I do. And what you do. That's what we're supposed to do. It's entertain and inform, not right. Just say we ought to get them off the streets. It's the liberals. It's Antifa. You know, throw a little music in there. Do something. That's
a little comedy. Make us laugh.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a thing as called cumulative listeners. Which radio forgot about.
Yeah, but I wonder if the old radio model is even viable anymore. I know people listen in the car, but honestly, I don't ever turn on the regular radio dial in the car anymore. I will plug in my phone and listen to, you know, an online show over TuneIn or something, because there's nothing on the public airwaves, the so-called public airwaves, that captures my imagination anymore.
And here's the
thing. And you know, it's sad.
Yes.
No, go ahead, Britt.
Well, Parkland's recently in the news again, the Parkland massacre.
Which is right next door to us.
I was on the road. I had emergency vehicles whizzing by me from all types of jurisdictions, from Miami. We live in Coral Springs. I'm like, what are they doing here? And it wasn't nothing on the radio. I got a call, Judy called me, so CNN. I turned on the radio. It was Rush, Hannity, Levin. It was sports. Nothing. It was dead air. And we had a major crisis.
But meanwhile, I was on the air at that time. And somebody in my chat room said, there's a shooting, an active shooting in Parkland. I'm like, that's me. Where? Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Oh, my God. That's 10 minutes down the road. Britt and I actually went there in the days after where, you know, people were laying flowers and tributes. And it was just heartbreaking. But yeah, you turn on live radio and there's no coverage of it because nobody's live. Nobody's live. Right. Nobody's
and,
local.
And part of the reason for that is automation, frankly. Mm-hmm. We talk about the future of self-driving trucks and things like that. Well, all you have to do is look at what happened to radio and you can see because, you know, I'm in radio. I don't know how it was for you, Nicole, or you, Britt. But I'm in radio because I was 16 years old and had a driver's license and was a pimply-faced little kid who didn't care what kind of music she was playing as long as I was playing music and reading the news.
Wow.
Because I love the art form, and it is an art form, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's all gone now. There are no pimply-faced 16-year-olds learning to queue up records or even popping carts into cart decks. It's all done by computer, and it's all done by automation scripts.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
One of the most awful radio experiences I ever had was back when I was still on terrestrial radio. I just wanted to jock some music on the rock and roll side. And so I did, but the reason I work live to this day is because it is the immediacy of live broadcasting that makes everything so special. And so I was standing there in the booth recording stop sets, you know, with my funny British roadie accent. And it was like, well, okay, but this isn't fun.
No,
this isn't voice even tracking. As much fun as queuing up the Happy Goodman family or the Chuck Wagon Gang to sing "Dropkick Me Jesus" through the goalposts of life. So there needs to be a structural reform in terms of how radio stations are run because the money now, thanks to the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Is in massive massive multiple station ownership.
Yep.
And if you're trying to staff live talent on every one of those things, you can't make money.
No.
But you can make money if it's all just automated.
You know,
and the way to automate is to bring in all this right-wing hate garbage that's out there like a mighty sewer.
I wanted to put this in the letter, but it would have been too long. The real reason Bill Clinton signed that into law is because Newt Gingrich threatened a government shutdown over his budget.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And that thing, you know, a lot of people say bring back the fairness doctrine. I don't want the fairness doctrine back because I don't want some Lauren Bobblehead Boebert or some Marjorie Taylor Greene cucumber telling me I have to give her opposing time on my fucking air. Oh, hell no.
I hear you. Yeah, I'm not.
We didn't have to do that when we had the fairness doctrine. They had their own shows.
No, actually we did. And I used to produce, well, I started as a kid, out of college, I went back to New York and I was a producer at WMCA and Bob Grant, I produced his show and he's one of the original right wing hate talkers.
Oh yeah.
And I saved all kinds of stuff and I have responses from people like Pat Buchanan, who at the time, this is before he got kicked off of MSNBC, he had been in the Nixon White House and this is the old days before computers and emails, and I had to send letters inviting people on to present the other side to give equal time, although mm-hmm. that's not the equal mm-hmm. time thing, it's fairness doctrine. But I do have those letters saying thank you, but I'm okay. You know, those overtures that I had to make. If we had somebody on one side of an issue, I had to invite somebody on the other side of the issue.
because that's how you fulfill your public service obligation relative to one's license.
Right. Yeah. And of course, back then, that station had on Bob Grant, who was the rightest of right wingers, and Barry Gray, who was a bleeding heart liberal. We had everything on one station. That's how it used to be.
Most
well, yeah, and you know what? That's a smart business model.
Yeah.
Because right wingers buy cars.
That's right.
Left wingers buy cars.
That's right.
You know, right wingers buy appliances, left wingers buy appliances. Something for everybody.
Yeah. But it doesn't top the main objective of ownership and management today, and that is messaging. They don't care how much money they lose.
Precisely.
The money, they're going to be supplemented one way or another.
Because that's secondary to the message they want to get out.
Exactly. And you know, I read your petition, and I love the fact that you said, what about Air America? Mm-hmm. Air America was horribly mismanaged.
Horrible.
And you know, there's hours of radio in that story alone. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, I think we've largely given up on terrestrial radio. Everybody but you, Britt. God bless you.
They didn't. They're still
churning it out. But it's mostly broker time, right? It's you know.
But you know what we need is to, and it's just like kind of just like being trans, we have an obligation to educate. And what we need is some of those wonderful star-fucking limousine liberals to understand that there is a great benefit in owning, because little small town radio stations are actually licenses to print money.
Yeah, because you're the only game in town. You're the local voice, and people will tune in to get local coverage.
Cheap.
Yeah. Yes,
they're relatively cheap. If you buy a bunch of them, there's enough progressive content out there that you could, and it doesn't have to be some 50,000 watt blowtorch in South Florida. It can be a 5,000 watt flickering candle flame in Busted Knuckle, Alabama. But you have to, by God, start somewhere.
Yeah. That's true. So, all right, let's make this a project. We'll get on it. Let's do it from the comfort of our own homes where we're
shut
in. We'll
get a couple trans girls on it.
Safe. Sounds good. I love it. Robin Kincaid, you can find her 5 to 8 p.m. live at headonlive.com. Headon.live. Britt Summers, or your show, you're live. Do you do the show live, or you pre-record it and it airs on the weekends?
It's live on Friday. I uploaded it for Saturday night.
Okay.
1470 WWNN 95.3, 96.9, 103.9.
But for everybody, anywhere, thebrittsummershow.com.
Yeah. That's where you get all the dirty stuff.
Yeah. Because you can't. You still can't say fuck over the air. And, you know, I can think of a lot
tits.
Of things.
I got yelled at for tits.
Tits? A lot of things more offensive than fucking tits. Like Marjorie Taylor Greene. That's more offensive.
Her name you could say.
Yeah. Anyway.
So that's a whole nother show.
Yes, it is. And we are just about out of time.
I don't think we'd have any trouble at all filling that time in.
Oh, God. None at all. Well, thank you so much. Robin, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And congratulations. And
I'm just so grateful for you asking me on. I'm really, really appreciative of the opportunity. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Anytime. And you know, you've been on the show before to mostly talk about, you know, mountaintop coal mining in West Virginia.
We're still doing it.
Yep. And, you know, and some things never change, unfortunately. So we will stay on top of that. And you keep, you know, doing your great work. And Boca Britt Summers, I'm so glad you guys have met. And I see a new friendship here.
Oh, I do, too. And I envy you both your warm weather right now. But we'll have ours sooner or later. Actually.
Yeah, right now. It's supposed to get cold in the next few days. Yeah, I'm actually wearing long sleeves. I'm usually here in a tank top. So.
Oh, I get to wear my warm wear. I'm so excited.
Oh, I've been in the official West Virginia girl uniform for months now. It's, you know, a pair of leggings and a sweater. You know.
Do coal industry advocates wear spats?
I think we should make them.
All right. Thank you. Britt Summers, Robin Kincaid, you guys rock. Thank you so much. Oh, and that does it for us. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Have a great weekend, everyone. And I will see you Monday. We'll do, Tom Hartman's on the show Monday. So come on back. We're here. Have a great weekend. And yeah, stay safe.